This week, the markets tread water amid continued political debate in Washington. Welcome back to GoldSeek.com Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Walczak, with you on this October 4th. Well, 1 week after the CFTC dismissed the silver manipulation case, on Tuesday, a flash crash caused the CFTC to, well, proclaim that the event appeared to be due to manipulation. The silver investor joins me with his view on the ruling. David Morgan outlines where he sees the silver market as well as the prospects for much higher prices. Next, the political fireworks continued this week regarding the national budget and the looming debt default. Charles Goyette joins me with his perspective on the unfolding drama. We discuss the unfair taxes levied on the precious metals sector, a tax that Dr. Ron Paul has said must be abolished. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with another illuminating report. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with the Market Weatherman Report. Partly sunny skies appeared over the precious metals exchanges this week. Despite a mini flash crash on the COMEX Tuesday, investors used the event to procure discounted gold positions on dollar weakness amid continued debt ceiling and related political disputes on Capitol Hill. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX Exchange, the yellow metal dropped about 20, ending at 1311, while silver finished near the break-even point for the week, around 2174 an ounce. On Tuesday, a flash crash rattled the gold futures market, which recorded the biggest daily percentage drop in about a month, on the heels of a large COMEX sell order. The event triggered market rigging and manipulation talk amid the gold crowd regarding the COMEX exchange. So just what was behind the sharp sell-off? Well, according to CFTC regulator Bart Chilton, manipulation may have been the cause. The sale occurred with virtually no significant economic report or data. Plus, the event transpired without similar activity in competing markets. However, another possibility is fund liquidation due to fourth quarter portfolio rebalancing. Nevertheless, gold held up well after the reaction, likely due to expectations that the first government shutdown in 17 years could lower the U.S. AAA credit rating, in turn eroding confidence in the U.S. dollar and increasing demand for the safe haven properties of gold and silver. The impasse in Washington entered the fourth day against the backdrop of intense political wrangling by policymakers over the budget and the debt limit. Approximately 1 million federal employees are now furloughed, plus there remains the potential for an October 17th debt default. So it appears that no resolution is in sight, at least for another week. One astute market watcher compared the U.S. with the recent $600 million debt bankruptcy default by Detroit, noting that the debt owed by Detroit was half the national debt per capita by the U.S. According to one source, buyers are adding to gold stockpiles as a hedge against further market turmoil. So a case can be made that gold actually held up very well this week. The small loss appears to be mostly due to the COMEX flash crash. In related news, the Chinese markets remain closed for the National Day of the People's Republic of China through Monday. Without buying support from mainland China, price sluggishness was virtually guaranteed. On a tangent note, one analyst noted in a conference this week that silver coin buyers have no intentions of parting with their investments until the price climbs at least to $200 to $300 an ounce. Bottom line on the precious metals. Well, in the last report, an amicable solution to the U.S. government debt ceiling was anticipated, but legislators failed to compromise this week. If this is a new precedent of disunity, the looming debt default could throw the nation and even the world into economic chaos. Since the U.S. government is bankrupt, given the national debt of $17 trillion and the unfunded liabilities well in excess of $100 trillion, I expect gold price sluggishness on positive budget news and strength on resolution delays. My gold and silver and XAU and stock forecasts for next week and beyond are at the top of your Alpha Stocks newsletter page, so be sure to log in by Sunday evening for the predictions and stock candidates. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly cloudy skies appeared over the equities markets. Investors continued to shed stocks on the Dow and S&P 500, preferring instead the NASDAQ tech alternatives due to the political ambiguities in Washington. By the closing bells on the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow Jones Industrials retreated by about 1%, nearly 200 points, managing to hold above that psychologically significant point, 15,000 point, at 15,072. The S&P 500 shed a point, ending at 16,000. 1698 virtually unchanged, while the Nasdaq fared best, picking up 26 points, ending at 3807. Meanwhile, Fed officials cited that a lack of data due to the shutdown could require further monetary stimulus by the FOMC to compensate for the political rancor on Capitol Hill. However, the news did little to encourage the bulls, as markets dislike the uncertainty caused by the debt ceiling negotiations in Washington. A weaker-than-anticipated report on U.S. employment from the ADP indicated that private sector jobs increased by only 166,000 last month, less than the expected 180,000 figure. Furthermore, ADP revised down the August jobs number by 20,000. Given the Fed's unemployment target as a key metric behind their stimulus plans, this was viewed as a positive for the precious metals and less so for equities. Elsewhere, the refining petroleum products company TransMontaigne, TLP, improved this week, adding almost 2%. According to DCF analysis, the stock remains undervalued by about 100%. Shares seem to have found strong support at the 50-period moving average, suggesting that a move to a high of 80 could be in the cards. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, according to Market Sentiment Index, fear is finally re-entering the market, and this is viewed as a positive from a contrarian perspective. The Alpha Stock subscribers had a one-week advance notice to the selling this week, so be sure to log in for next week's stock picks and market forecasts. Coming up, more GoldSeek.com radio with David Morgan and Charles Goyette. So grab an ice pack. Your ears will thank you with so much red-hot profit-building info pouring through the speakers. Stay with GoldSeek. Charles Goyette penned The Dollar Meltdown, the New York Times bestseller, as well as his latest Red and Blue and Broke All Over, Restoring America's Free Economy. Welcome back, Charles Goyette.
Chris, great to speak with you again.
Well, let's start off with the first government shutdown in 17 years. You know, the political wrangling appears to hinge primarily on the health care bill, but the administration wants everyone to receive benefits. Meanwhile, Medicare, though, and Medicaid payments will continue. The opposition says no way. Bickering has led to a shutdown in some basic services. Most government agencies are expected to run, though, without closing their doors at least for a few days to weeks. In your opinion, what are the lasting impacts of this event on the economy?
The lasting impact is very, very bad because, once again, this is a sideshow. Look, the Republicans can lock arms with one another to pretend to fight Obamacare, but they're not serious even about that. They're politically posturing in this regard because, after all, what is the template that the Republicans wish to replace it with? It's Romney care. It's Republican care. It's Boehner care. Nobody in the Republican Party makes a good, coherent argument for a true free market healthcare system that is more widely accessible and more affordable to all people. So they're fighting the state socialist healthcare system with the intent of replacing it with another state socialist healthcare system, but the one that will have their fingerprints on it rather than Obama's fingerprints on it. In the meantime, the real issue that we should be paying attention to is not the shutdown of the government, but it's effectively the long-term shutdown of the currency in our economy.
And I think that's a good segue into just what occurred the last time we saw this debate over the debt ceiling and related issues. You know, we did see the precious metals surge higher. Gold, of course, closed over $1,900 an ounce. And that's not to say that we're going to see a lockstep repeat this time, but folks start to become concerned when they see government shutdown, I think, understandably. Are we going to, you think, see some upward pressure as a result of this as people turn to safe haven investments?
This is the beginning of the fiscal year, the fiscal year 2014. At the end of this year, what will the configuration of federal economics be? The government will be bigger. The debt will be much larger. Spending will have grown. The Fed will have printed more money, created more fiat money out of thin air. You know, with the conjunction of one of my books, in fact, The Dollar Meltdown years ago, I did a chart that got circulated quite widely. It was very popular. It correlated the increases. In fact, I dealt with this in one of the chapters of the book, increases in the national debt ceiling with the increase in the price of gold. So it's not fixed. It's not locked in. It doesn't have to be, you know, a one-to-one move. But over the long trend, we know what happens when they raise the national debt ceiling, that visible government spending will certainly go up under that scenario, but the hidden government spending goes up as well. So the prospect for precious metals is ultimately much, much higher.
No, I think it's a really good point, because it's easy to forget that at the end of the day, I mean, this really is a dollar story. I mean, folks can procure precious metals for many reasons, whether it be speculative or portfolio insurance, all generally good ideas. But ultimately, inflation comes down to the erosion of purchasing power resulting from the national currency and its decline. And as you say, we've seen this trend for many years, but in the last 3 years, the greenback has stabilized somewhat, despite the recent weakness we've had here. Is this simply a pause on the way to lower levels for the greenback, the U.S. dollar?
This is all relative. You know, if things get really, really, really bad in Europe, you know, the dollar seems to rise relative to the European currency or some other currency. But this is all sleight of hand. This is all, you know, you go down to Times Square and you can watch guys playing shell games. This is effectively a shell game. Look, all paper currencies are irredeemable. There's not a redeemable paper currency in the world. There's not a currency that is a claim check on something. You cannot go to the central bank of any nation and turn your paper money in for something real. Except for more of the same that they can print up in the basement or create electronically. So the value of all paper currencies, of all electronic currencies, is in decline. The purchasing power of all currencies is in long-term decline. So when we hear that the dollar is stable, I don't know, maybe it's, you know, I guess if you have receivables in euros or in yen, these things matter to you. But for most people, it's like saying, you know, that the dollar is descending at a 19% rate, but the other Titanic, the euro, is descending at a 21% rate, so the dollar looks very stable. You know, none of this is true. It is simply not stable, and it will not be stable as long as it can be created willy-nilly by an act of, federal bureaucrats, or as long as the government believes that it can give people something for nothing by deficit spending. So, I mean, all of this is a shell game to say that the dollar is up or the dollar is down against what? Against other paper currencies that are also inherently worthless. So, and the shell game can go on for a long time. I mean, people can be taken in for a long time. The crowd can grow bigger. More and more can be, convinced to lay a $20 down on the table and try to win the shell game and be deceived by it. You know, play three-card Monte on Broadway in New York. I mean, it can go on for a very long time, and indeed it has, but it cannot go on forever.
In this theme of street card hustles, if you will, are we losing our right to such a high AAA credit rating status with, such enormous debt and very little organized effort, I think, to clear the system or leadership in that area, for that matter. If we lose our moniker as the world's reserve currency, how could that impact the economy and the precious metals sector?
Well, it's actually a timely question. It's a very precarious situation, and actually there are people that are suggesting that President Obama, if Congress does not pass to his liking or in his calendar a statutory debt ceiling increase, that he go ahead and authorize the spending of the money anyway, rendering effectively null the role of Congress to create borrowing authority for the government. Look, if they do something like that, they further risk the peril that we're in now of the rest of the world in wide-eyed astonishment looking at us and understanding that this is nothing, you know, this is nothing but a flim-flam. We can issue currency against Federal Reserve operations. We can borrow money relentlessly from the rest of the world, and we do not even have to have statutory authority. What happens when they want to be paid back for their bonds? Hey, what happened to the rule of law? the president pierced the statutory debt ceiling without regard to the rule of law. So this will get the world's attention if they do this. But in any event, the world is slowly waking up to the peril of the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. I mean, look, China is moving. It's not. It used to be surreptitiously moving, in the direction of gold. There's nothing hidden about it now. And if they end up linking the Chinese yuan to gold in a meaningful way, I mean, not another currency flim-flam, but in some sort of link in which there is some sort of redeemability, then China will have secured its place as the number one commercial nation of the world on the world stage for the next 100 years, and the United States will have slipped and fallen badly.
I mean, we're certainly reading endless articles on this topic, a lot of conjecture regarding whether or not China and Russia are attempting to set up a regional reserve currency that has sound money backing. At least their government operations with regard to procuring the precious metals indicates that they have.
Chris, it's even bigger than at the level of the state, because here in the state, you know, the American state taxes precious metals at a penalty rate. The American state constantly is at war with gold and silver, trying to keep the American people from availing themselves of its safety. But in China, on the other hand, the people are encouraged to own gold and silver. So it's not just the state enterprise, but it's the people themselves. The people in China, look, these are among the biggest savers in the world. They understand the value of gold and silver. They do not believe, because they don't have a lying state or elected class that tells them, we're going to take care of your retirement, we're going to take care of your health care, we're going to take care of you in your golden age. When you're old, don't worry, everything will be covered. They don't have that. So we've been bamboozled, we've been beguiled, we've been seduced by politicians promising that they will take care of our retirement for us, they will take care of our health care for us, and so Americans have become slipshod as far as saving goes, while the Chinese have been some of the biggest savers in the world, knowing full well that they have to take care of themselves. And when they save, do they want to save irredeemable paper currencies? No, they have a predisposition to gold.
You bring up this concept of government collusion against the precious metals. Imagine, for instance, if the U.S. dollar was taxed at 20-30%. It'd become a worthless relic of a currency. Well, that's precisely what's happened to sound money here in the United States. And I know your comrade and friend of the show here, Ron Paul, has written extensively and talked extensively about this idea of simply removing capital gains tax off gold and silver. It really has no place there whatsoever. It's a penalty for those who wish to protect their savings, but I think it's a systemic penalty to 300 plus million Americans, in that the real currency, the sound money, real money, loses its attractiveness. Any comments?
This policy is witness to the fact that the issuers of the currency even know that they are involved in a flim-flam. Look, when the currency is sound, when the currency is desirable, you don't have to persuade anybody under force of law, under penalty of prison. You don't have to force people with legal tender laws to use it. People prefer sound currencies, and they will flock to them. They'll demand them in their commercial transactions. They'll use them for their savings. People desire sound, reliable currencies. So when do you need legal tender laws to force people to use currencies? Only when the currency is suspect and people would otherwise use something different. But you've alluded to something actually that Nobel Prize winner Friedrich Hayek championed, and that is, you know, to let currencies compete, and let the if the dollar is desirable in equal circumstances, on equal footing, and no more punitive tax treatment competing currencies like gold and silver, then let the people decide. If Paul Krugman and Ben Bernanke want to trade in, who knows, if they want to trade in IMF special drawing rights, if they want to save their money in IMF fiat drawing rights, they're free to do. Why shouldn't they be free to do so? Let them make their. Now, nobody may want to take that currency in 20 years when they retire and they want to use it to buy retirement. But, you know, they're you know, PhDs. These are Princeton professors. You know, they're the ones that have tried to order the economic affairs of our whole nation to our peril. So let them go ahead and decide to save in special drawing rights or any currency that they prefer. But let the rest of us have a choice as well.
It's a theme. They talk about confidence. Back to the Lehman catastrophe there, the CEO Fold complaining on CNBC about these devilish short sellers. It's the short sellers taking down my stock. It's the short sellers destroying my company. And of course, we find out a few weeks later, yeah, the short sellers took down your company because it was riddled with mountains of toxic debt. An apt parallel to what we're seeing with the United States. Sure, we've got the AAA rating, but just like in 2008, where it took months, if not years, before the rating agencies finally came clean on many of the companies and countries out there with this toxic debt on their balance sheets, we too, on the United States balance sheet, that has to be dealt with.
Well, you're right that it does have to be dealt with. And look, I understand why, you know, the dollar appears to be more desirable than some other currencies for brief interludes. I've likened it, Chris, in the past to you take your family, your friends, your company, your employees, whatever, to the park, and you're out playing softball, or you've spread the blankets and you're having a picnic, and the kids are romping and stomping and having a great time, and all of a sudden it clouds up and it starts to rain. So everybody grabs the picnic basket and they head out under the bohio or under the ramada, you know, to wait for the little rain cloud to blow past, and then they'll go enjoy themselves again. That's the dollar. That's fine. Okay, there's a crisis. You don't know who to trust. You know that, when you invest in the dollar, you say, you know, well, they may print these things at will, but even if they have to print it, they'll pay our money back. Our treasury will be paid, even if it's depreciated dollars. But whatever, we do not want to invest in rubles or yuan or euros or whatever the other currency may be in the crisis during the circumstance. And that's fine for a few minutes for some people for certain needs. But I will tell you, it is for people that are interested in insurance against a currency crisis, for long-term capital preservation, and even in times like this, I believe the gold price where it is now, even just for the pure pleasure of profit, you wouldn't want to try to live under the Ramada at the park. You know, you wouldn't want to try to withstand a hurricane there. It might be fine for the afternoon sprinkles, but when the real storm blows in, or when you huddle in for the night or for difficult times, you know, the Ramada is no place to be. You want to be in a sound structure.
We hear constantly from technicians and many folks out there that, well, I'll have plenty of time to jump back on the bandwagon when gold gets above that resistance at 1500, silver over 26. These debacles and issues come like a thief in the night. If you knew your house was going to burn down next week, of course you bought insurance this week. But we don't know when the threat is going to occur. I mean, it can come like a lightning strike. And that's why everybody has to have some precious metals insurance. Now, this wasn't the case 50, 60, 70, 100 years ago. Why? Because the currency had some backing. And even after the 70s, when Nixon slammed the gold window down, there was an enormous amount of silver money in circulation, which I think buoyed the economy somewhat. It's something that I've never heard any academic discuss.
Well, it was even more than that. I mean, look, we had growth that was the envy of the world. We had 6% economic growth. We had 4%. Even in the 70s, I think we were managing 4% economic growth. We were the manufacturing hegemon of the world. China wasn't even really in the game. There was effectively no China. You know, Russia wasn't even really, considered one of the producing nations. That wasn't even in the game. We had billions of people around the world under the heel of the boot of the state in communist systems that weren't competing with us. We were strong. We were robust. We were powerful. And so even if gold had been eliminated, people believed, you know, the American dream, American productivity, and so on and so forth. Well, they squandered that pretty well. I mean, we could barely eke out 2% economic growth now with the growth of the state. I'll tell you, better than a chart that correlates the stepped up increases in the national debt ceiling and the price of gold, people ought to look at a chart. And this is the theme of my most recent book, Red and Blue and Broke All Over. People ought to look at a chart that correlates the growth of liberty or the inversely, the growth of the state versus the prosperity of the people. And so you can clearly understand when you familiarize yourself with these arguments that as the American state has grown bigger, the American dream has been suffocated. And and I will tell you, the story of the dollar is evident. The long-term outcome of this story of the dollar is evident in this brinksmanship that is going on in Washington now. The reason that these shutdowns grow more severe, the reasons the divides grow sharper, the reasons the political rancor grows, and it's not just rancor between the Republicans and Democrats internally. Within the Republican Party, there's nothing more hateful than between, a couple of factions in the Republican Party and the way they diss one another in their collegial gentlemen's club. But all of this is evidence that the pie itself is shrinking, that there are increasing demands for the American military overseas empire, for the military industrial state, for the welfare state, for the warfare state. There are increased demands for the maturing baby boomers and their retirement needs, for promises the politicians have made for prescription drug care, for health care, Obamacare. The demands are increasing, but the pie itself is shrinking. And so characteristically, the debates become more rancorous, more heated, more voluble, and there is a lot more of this ahead in our future. But I think that people that look at the state of the dollar and the alternative of gold and silver to the state of the dollar can, better than looking at a chart, better than looking at a trend line, an overhead resistance or a support level or something, look at the visible signs and the behavior of the governing classes as they go at one another's throat. Their very political survival is at stake, and so it becomes very bitter indeed, because they've cultivated constituencies that are now utterly dependent on their promises, and there's not enough pie to go around for everybody.
No, you talk about lack of growth, and if we look at 1980 to 2000, you know, that 20-year period there, as I think is evidenced in the charts, particularly by the Dow and the equities markets, the phenomenal growth, we don't have to even look at the GDP figures. I mean, just take a look at stocks on average. It was an incredible period of growth, and so the correlation, I think, between debt levels came insignificant. But today, we don't have that luxury of excess growth, or even, I think, acceptable growth levels. So debt becomes a huge factor, taking us back at least to the 70s. I think we're seeing signs that the everyday person recognizes this, that this is why silver is flying off the shelves. Silver eagles, they cannot keep them in stock. U.S. Mint showed that we had sold more silver eagles this time of the year than all of 2012. The gnomoyen, if you will, recognizes that this is a genuine threat to everyone's wealth, the loss of purchasing power here. Well, as we wrap up, any other topics?
No, you covered them all, except to say you talked about the growth of the economy, the American economy, and the stock market during the boom years. You look at a chart now, you have to ask yourself, how does an economy that barely musters 2% growth justify a stock market that's done 20%. Speaking of correlations, as we have done on your program, if you look at the overlay, at the correlation of the wave after wave of the climbing stock market to these heights, and overlay that with the round after round of quantitative easing, you see the correlation is very clear. They're the only wind beneath the wings of the stock market here has been money printing, a perilous situation indeed.
Exactly, and we're watching that balance sheet expand at an enormous pace. The last check, $3.3 trillion, roughly $1 trillion a year, and the Fed can't even pull the trigger on reducing it $5 or $10 billion a month. It's comical. Even if they did drop it by $5 or $10 billion a month, or even $100 billion, it would amount to about $100 billion a year. That's still roughly $900 billion a year added to the Fed's balance sheet. Please tell folks more about your bestsellers, as well as any contact information.
CharlesGoyette.com. My website has been down for a few years while I've concentrated on writing projects, but it'll be up in another week or two. And that's about all. Ron Paul's America on radio stations all over the country, twice daily radio commentary on current events and news. Make sure your favorite radio station knows that they can have Ron Paul's America, the twice daily commentary. All they have to do is contact the syndicator for that. Their favorite radio station knows how to do that. And that's it, Chris.
No, we're going to put links up to everything you've mentioned there to encourage our listener base. I want to encourage everyone to bookmark those sites ASAP. So, as always, Charles Goyette, we want to thank you for your comments today.
Wonderful to speak with you again, Chris. Thank you.
Pleasure to welcome back to the show the silver investor David Morgan, publisher of The Morgan Report, and silver-investor.com. Welcome back, David Morgan.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Well, let's begin the discussion today, if we could, with the silver market. You know, during market reactions, investors tend to seek intrinsic value to give them an idea of where the price floor is likely to come into place. According to one source, the true price of silver production is in the neighborhood of $20 an ounce for 2013. That would put silver near fair value at these levels. What production cost would you put on silver?
The Morgan Report did a very detailed study on the true cost of production. Now, we looked at several miners, and these are primary silver producers, such as First Majestic, as an example. Again, we did several of them. And we found it was roughly in the 22 range. It varies mine to mine. In fact, within like First Majestic, they have more than one mine under their corporate umbrella. And of course, it varies from mine to mine, but the overall price was in that range. So, yes. And I want to go further, Chris, if I might. There's a book out long ago called You Can't Lose Trading Commodities. And anyone that's ever traded commodities or attempted to would be very fascinated by that title. So I bought the book and read it. In fact, he's actually a client of one of the brokers I use. Nonetheless, the point being that he made a very, very interesting point. What he said was if you can buy any commodity under the true cost of production and be patient, you will make money. And I think his premise is correct. So if you could buy, let's say, 18, 19 in that range and have patience, I'm not saying do it leverage, I'm not saying do it on margin, I'm saying if you can buy any commodity under the cost of production and be patient, you're going to make money. So that's about where we are right now. And the longer we stay in this range, the greater propensity there is for mines to slow their production or even curtail it or even close it. We've seen a couple of our juniors, unfortunately, one that announced is going into full production, had great metrics. It was small, could grow. It fit a lot of our profile for speculation. And we got fairly excited, but not overly so. And it wasn't within about a month or so after that announcement, they decided basically to shut everything down. And, of course, that was a huge disappointment for everyone. But you can see their logic. It was basically, well, if we're just going to be very marginal here, we really haven't ramped up yet. Rather than ramp up, we're just going to cool our heels for a while.
Very good. Well, you know, I like that concept of buying, you know, underneath the intrinsic value or near the intrinsic value, because unlike stocks, which hinge so much upon cash flows, we really don't have cash flow from most precious metals investment. And so by buying particularly bullion near its production cost, you do sort of have that insurance policy of knowing that in order to replace these ounces, this is what you would expect to pay. Move on to the CFTC report, and they announced the end of an investigation into complaints on rigging in the silver market and the related manipulations. I wonder if you took a look at this announcement and if you have any comments on silver market manipulation.
Well, certainly I have, and I did write about it in this month's Morgan Report. But basically, if you read the exact quote, what they really said was they did not say that they didn't find manipulation. What they said was that they didn't have enough information slash evidence, and those are my words, not them, but what they said was based on the fact-finding expedition that they've done for 5 long years, they haven't got enough information to go further and take anyone to task, be it an employee or a firm. So that doesn't mean that they didn't find evidence of manipulation. What it means is that they, at law, think that there isn't enough evidence, if you, and that's my word, to go further down the road. And I've always stated to prove manipulation is extremely difficult. However, is it done absolutely? Furthermore, I'm on record, and this is something I said in front of Bill Murphy and Jeff Christian, kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, if you will, at the Silver Summit probably about 4 years ago, and we were all asked about the silver mark manipulation. And I said, the long-term trend cannot be manipulated. And I believe that's factually proven by the fact that both gold and silver have been in major uptrends for several years in a row, and not to make light of the fact that they've been consolidated and in a downtrend the last couple. But the overall trend is up. But within the overall trend, certainly the market can be manipulated and has been and probably will continue to be so. But I don't like using manipulation as an excuse or someone that uses the idea that, oh, I can't win because of market antics. Because if you're really truthful and you really look at all markets, they're basically all manipulated. I mean, this high-frequency trading, the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the Working Group on Financial Markets, what goes on in options expiration, what the big brokers are allowed to get away with, the advantages that are given to the shorts, the advantages that are given to the commercial interest, and on it goes. Anyone that has any modicum of common sense can see clearly that these markets are not really free trading most of the time, if not for all practical purposes, never. That does not mean that you can't buy a commodity under the price of production.
No, exactly right. I mean, go back to gold market manipulation. Over, 100 years ago, you saw Fisk and Gould run up the price of gold, and then Gould pulled out his position on Wall Street, and hundreds of traders lost everything, and they simply blamed it all on Gould. But in the final analysis, you know, trying to point the finger at one source for manipulating a market, I think, is a lofty goal. Livermore, as I said, Gould, Fisk, Vanderbilt, many have had the finger pointed at them, but they were mostly scapegoats. Want to move on here to the Commitment of Traders Report. COT continues to improve here amid this reaction we've seen in the past 3 or 4 weeks. Commercial shorts clearly covering their positions. Any comments?
First of all, if you go back to the early days, meaning of this bull market, which would be the early 2000s for gold or silver, before the advent of the ETFs, this is prior to the gold ETF and the silver ETF, you could basically trade basis to the Commitment of Traders report with extreme accuracy. In fact, I did a special report that I put out at Silver Summit years and years and years ago that showed exactly what to look for and how to do it. Since the advent of the gold ETF, the silver ETF, and several more besides the SLV and the GLD, it's been diluted. However, the COTs are important. So two further comments. Number one, the setup for the commercial interests have not been this favorable for about two decades. So we're talking 20 years now. So what that implies is that the overhead resistance in the futures markets, or in the derivatives markets, if you prefer, is probably better favorable to gold and silver than it's been COT-wise in a long time. But I was thinking about that today, Chris, and I started thinking that perhaps, and this is just an opinion, not a fact, that maybe they lightened up their short positions at the end of the CFTC investigation so they could just throw up their hands, had it gone further, which it isn't, and say, oh, well, hey, we're not always that short. Look at our recent activity. We're basically very lightly short, or some nonsense like that. Again, opinion. The second point being that, again, I think patience is something that you need to bear in mind here. Very few people are adept at trading. Most people that try it lose. But if you are looking for an edge, the COT is one that is a tool of many that can be used. Again, just to reiterate slightly, in the day, back in the early 2000s, the COT was a major tool to be used for timing purposes. Today, it's somewhat useful, but not nearly as much as it once was.
Folks need to, I think, turn off the computer screens every now and then and recognize that the long-term monthly trend, as you alluded to earlier, remains up. And we can't let ourselves get caught up in the emotion. It's typical after the parabolic rise we saw from around, I want to say, 2010 into 2013, we had a threefold increase in the price of silver. That momentum has to be unwound. And if you're a long-term investor, who doesn't mind a lower price on your investment du jour? I look at these pullbacks as an opportunity as opposed to this end of bull market mentality.
I couldn't agree more. And its problem, I think, is that people get excited and they follow the herd and they get into this momentum thinking or this idea that all they have to do is buy everything now. And that's really an undisciplined approach. And usually you pay a price for that. So people that got in, I was just doing another interview this morning, and this guy said, you know, he said, get in at 35. What I did say, and you can go back and check the records in the public domain, was that if you were going to buy, this is when it went from 19 to 48. When it went to 35, I was getting very nervous. But what I said publicly is, if you have to buy silver now, don't buy it all. And what I was explaining or trying to inject into people's consciousness was that 35 is pretty far from 19, where we were just, you know, a couple of months before, and it's going to pull back sooner or later. And I called the top at 48 almost within the day. I was about 2 or 3 days early. The point being that you've got to have discipline, and you've got to have a long-term view. You've got to know why you own these metals. If you own these metals for a quick buck and you have a day trader or trader mentality only, and I have both an investor and a trader mentality, then so be it. I'm not going to tell anyone how to run their lives. But if you own the metals for the right reasons, and they're down now, certainly you may be feeling some pain. But if they're fully paid for, no leverage, just wait. They're coming up.
Why don't you make a case then, if you don't mind, for higher precious metals, particularly silver? I mean, if we look at the fundamentals, of course, we're near the cost of production. We both agree on that. You know, it's not as though the Federal Reserve isn't printing any more money, and they did just curtail their end of taper discussion, so that was a bit of a shock. What do you think is going to be the impetus that brings the everyday trader back to the silver market?
It'll probably be after the fact. And what I mean by that, it'll be some kind of partial default. It could be something as easy as some big entity such as, let's say, Central Fund of Canada or maybe the Zurich Continental Bank or one of these larger entities that buys, you know, 20 million ounces of silver in one tranche, and all of a sudden that's delayed, delayed, delayed. Not officially a default, of course, but there's a big delay. That could be one impetus. The other one is the fundamental fact that no fiat currency goes forever. The idea that the Keynesian model, which is if there's a delay on the economy, what you do is you stimulate the economy by injecting more cash through the government base. And that's been done in QE1, QE2, QE3, Operation Twist, the taper, the non-taper. And what's happened? Nothing. Nothing has happened except the banks have been made solvent. So clearly, everything reaches a limit. And the limit has been reached in the Keynesian model. It doesn't work. It's not working. And the Fed knows this, but they don't have anything else because that's the model that they based the whole economy on. So knowing that fact, if you don't own precious metals at any level, then you're actually missing a fundamental, very common sense concept. That is that all paper money throughout all of recorded history has had huge problems and eventually they fail. Now, that doesn't mean it goes to absolute zero. That doesn't mean that you can't take a bunch of them and buy something with it. What it does mean is that Russia and China start trading with each other outside the dollar, that India and Russia do the same thing. These nation states are circumventing the dollar as much as possible and not buying our debt like they were several years ago. The dollar game is ending, and anyone that doesn't see that clearly is in trouble. And the way you protect yourself financially is to get into something outside of that matrix, and that means getting into gold and silver.
I think it's even more systemic than just the greenback. All major currencies, including the euro, the yen, the yuan, the pound sterling, and the U.S. dollar, throw them all into the mix. It is really a race to the bottom, as folks refer to it, as one currency continues to devalue in terms of all the others. This is a global phenomenon.
No, it's a world. The thing that worried me the most when I started the website and on the internet was that it is a global phenomenon. It's not just dollar-based. The dollar is a reserve currency, so as the dollar goes, so goes the global empire, you might say.
No, exactly. So, you know, then you have to find a place to harbor or crystallize the wealth that you've accumulated. But I wanted to also address the concerns that some of my guests have had on the show, including Peru Saxena, the technical breakdown that we're seeing in the charts in the precious metals, you know, under resistance around the $26 silver and $1,500 gold area. Folks are concerned that we must get back above those levels, get back up above resistance before one should even think about the end of the downtrend.
Yeah, I'll be consistent. I pretty much said that myself. I mean, I really think, and it's getting tighter and tighter time-wise, that we will see the $26 level and the $1,550 level or so in gold in the not before the end of the year. And I don't expect them to trade at those levels and stay there. I think they'll be tested. But I think that was the breakdown level. Those were great support for a long, long, long time. And then going back to manipulation, we had this massive sell-off. I mean, who would sell two-thirds of the silver production on paper in a matter of 20 seconds? I mean, give me a break. If that isn't manipulation, I don't know what is. But proving it, well, that's a different story. Back on point, yeah, I think if you're very conservative and you're not sure that, you know, I'm right or whoever holds the opinion that the precious metals bull market is still intact, the way to become conservative is pay higher. Wait for silver to trade above 26 for several weeks and gold to trade above 1550 for several weeks. Once that's established, then you have more certainty that the bull market is intact.
Very good. All right. I'd also like to talk about this dual threat of rehypothecation and bail-ins. It just seems almost every week we read another major story of legislation or account-related information that essentially says, well, you could be on the hook as an individual investor or as a pensioner or as a citizen for the mistakes made by these financial firms, banks, the industry, and even the government itself. Under those conditions, you know, one would certainly wonder about paper promises with regard to silver and be more inclined to procure silver bullion.
I agree. I mean, basically, the idea that a bank deposit is not at risk is ridiculous. In fact, what's interesting is I wrote about that in the Morgan Report about 1 month before the bail-in in Greece. And what I pointed out is if you read the contract, when you open a bank account, sign what's called the signature card, that's really a contrast. And it's referred to as a signature card, but it's really more than that. What it basically says is these assets for you are liabilities on our side. And basically, it's their money once you put it in their bank. I know people have a hard time with that concept because they trust banks and, you know, it's in the bank and all these references we have to, you know, the bank soundness and that type of thing. But the truth of the matter is that they can do what they do legally. And there's been further legislation, if you will, across the board, Canada, U.S., other countries, that basically reinforce the fact that if they so choose, meaning the banking system so choose, they can go ahead and take whatever they feel is required to for their purposes. So, yeah, I think everyone in today's world that's aware of what's really going on, which almost reads like a science fiction novel, you've got to have some asset that's outside the system. That, in most cases, means gold and silver coins. What I'd like to do is suggest everyone goes to silver-investor.com and get on our free email list. When you're on a free list, we allow you to get a full subscription to the Morgan Report for a 30-day free trial. So you can see everything that's in the members-only section. And I don't have time to go through everything that's in there. It's a monthly report, but it's much, much more than that. Just the study on silver's true price and gold's true price is probably worth any serious investor's time. Not to mention all the special reports we have. For example, if you're going to trade in these markets, making the best advantage of your broker. And we David Smith that works with us has a special report called Harvesting Green on the Pinks. And we don't do a lot on the junior side, believe me, but we do some. And this report alone will save you money on how to execute an order if you're going to do a pink sheet stock. Even if you're not in the mining sector and you do any pink sheet stocks, that report alone is probably going to pay you back the cost of the report because it's going to teach you how to execute an order and actually do it to your advantage rather than the broker's advantage. But I could go on and on. I won't. We put a lot of our heart and soul into this report, and we have since we established the website.
David Morgan, we want to thank you for your time today, and we certainly appreciate your thoughts and perspective on the markets, and I'm looking forward to having you back on the show as we make an assault on that resistance and overcome the 26 level on silver. I think that's going to be an exciting time and bring in a lot more interest to the market as people hopefully recognize that the reaction is over and the uptrend is going to re-exert some influence here. So we wish you the best.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. With all the pressuring and posturing about the government shutdown and debt ceiling talks, a situation appraisal is warranted. This is the 12th government shutdown since 1981. The longest was under Bill Clinton in a sparring match between him and Newt Gingrich in 1996. It lasted 21 days, but most have been short, a few days or a week at most. Did any of this political theater have any real lasting impact? Was spending really curtailed and long-term changes really put into effect? Nope, not even close. Will this 12th episode of the government shutdown playhouse have any real lasting effects? Quite possibly. We've never been in this kind of global situation before, where virtually every major country is engaged in their own form of money printing, as in quantitative easing. We've never been in a situation where global and domestic debt levels are so insanely high. Rest assured, the debt ceiling will eventually get raised, as it always does, but not without both sides extorting some additional spending out of each other at our expense. Remember, the debts are never paid. They are only expanded at the cost of diminishing the future value of the currency. Something else that could diminish is confidence. I mentioned this last week, and I'll mention it again. Our entire financial system is built not on anything tangible like gold or silver. Our entire financial system is built on confidence. Confidence, those little slips of paper, will always be able to be exchanged for something of value. Or confidence that only a reasonable amount of those little slips of paper will be needed to trade for the things we need to survive, like food, energy, and shelter. What happens when suddenly no one wants those little green slips of paper? How do we buy a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk? What happens if people suddenly want too many of those little green slips of paper, as in double, triple, quadruple, or more, to buy that gallon of milk and loaf of bread? What happens then? The past government shutdowns have had very little long-lasting effects. This one is likely to turn out the same way. But now, more than ever, the risks and uncertainties are greater. The pond is smaller and the rocks are bigger. And instead of ripples, the rocks are creating tidal waves. We cannot really do anything to change what's happening in Washington. All we can do is respond to the changes that are thrust upon us. We can align and redirect the forces of change so we navigate a different path, away from the psychopaths and parasites that would have us follow them over the cliff. The healthcare exchanges opened a few days ago. If you want to really know what your elected officials think of the average person who has to deal with this nightmare, just spell the phone number assigned to the healthcare hotline. It's 1-800-318-2596. If you spell 318-2596, you'll get a nice little reminder as you try to make sense of this growing nightmare. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter @ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.